football on Off the Ball.
I mean, how many times did you see a long ball going up to Jokeres and the two centre halves for Atleti letting it bounce and then him backing in and winning fouls? That's old school stuff, and people looking at it and think, oh, that's not great. What, you want me to get 15 passes before we get it up to?
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Yellow iPod on Off the Ball. Catch live and exclusive national radio commentary of the Men's League of Ireland Premier Division on Off the Ball all season.
Hello and welcome to the Yellow iPod on Off the Ball. Stephen with you again this week as we look ahead to another weekend's action in the SSE Airtricity Men's Premier Division. Before we do that, let's listen to what happened last Friday night on Off the Ball.
Good morning, Megan. Yes, you are welcome to AIM at DC Park. It's the home of Galway United, where the Tribesmen are taking on Shamrock Rovers tonight. Ball knocked long to Sobowale. Heads it inside to McGovern. McGovern then knocks it forward to Michael Noonan, running down the inside right channel. He's on the edge of the box. He's going to shoot. It's that boot, and it's a goal for Shamrock Rovers. Would you believe it? Just 50 seconds on the clock here at AIM at DC Park. And the club from Tala have got the lead. It's Michael Noonan scoring just his third goal of the Premier Division season, and that is a huge blow for the home team, conceding so early. Healy gives it to Jack Byrne. Byrne out to Subwally again, the right hand side, puts it across. Oh, it's come off the post, and Brennan is there to tuck it home from close range. It was a mistake at the back. I think it came off Kasim. He wasn't ready for it, and as it deflected off his head, it hit the post on this near side, and it came out to Adam Brennan, who had the easiest finish you will ever see, to make it. After 25 minutes, Galway United 0, Shamrock Rovers 2. Here is the corner kick towards the near post, and it's into the back of the net. It's a goal for Galway United. A header at the near post. A brilliant header. And as they celebrate here, Matty Wolfe, who came off the bench, was the man to rise and meet the corner unchallenged. A brilliant header from a bullet corner kick. Brennan puts the cross in, but it's headed away only as far as Matt Healy. Dozzy and Vuna tries to tee him up. He has to go out to Sobowale. Sobowale is a shot, and it's a goal for Shamrock Rovers. It's an absolute ripper of an effort there from Sobowale. He was inside the box, probably about 10 yards away from the goal line. He whacked it with his right foot, and Evan Watts would have no chance of saving that one. It's into the back of the net. It's Galway United 1, Shamrock Rovers 3, with 73 minutes on the clock. And it has finished in a victory for Shamrock Rovers away to Galway United, 3-1.
Galway United were actually very competitive for large parts of the game, and as I said, particularly when the game was 2-1, they looked like they could put Shamrock Rovers in a little bit of trouble. But I suppose the market champion Shamrock Rovers, when they really needed it, when they really needed their players to step up, they managed to get themselves out of it. These aren't the games that are going to define Galway United season. This, any result tonight, I suppose, would have been a bonus for them, but both managers to some degree will be content with their night's work.
How damaging was it to lose your two centre backs like Bruder and Facinieri? You have been that partnership.
It was such a blow because both of them played every minute of every game, you know, and there's such a good partnership built up. But look, at Williams came in and he was brilliant tonight, and in fairness to Conor McCormick, we all know he's a midfielder, but he went a centre back. We knew Frankie was out since during the week, should be back for next week, and Bruder had a bug.
When Roberto Lopez goes to the World Cup, it's almost like a dress rehearsal, getting those different back three combinations.
Yeah, it is. Look, I'd imagine that would be peak of he won't play for us again until after the World Cup, and imagine, you know, we could get him back, but I don't see we take that risk. It doesn't make sense. So look, you look at the players that are playing there tonight. You've got Enda has played at the highest level for a number of years. You've got Lee has been one of the best in the country for a long time, and Dan is very similar and has won so many titles. So when you have that three, you're really comfortable. Obviously Peake is a top player, but the three players, they're not three kids that come in and trying to learn the game. They're three top players.
Yeah, that's Rovers head coach Stephen Bradley speaking to myself after that game at AIM and DC Park on Friday night. Before that, you heard John Caulfield and Johnny Dunleavy, who was alongside me for the commentary on that match. And don't forget that LOI Late Night is on the Off the Ball X channel after the matches every Friday. You can jump on and listen from 10 o'clock, or if you want to join in and have your say about your team with Shane Keegan and Barry Murphy. And then on Saturday morning in your podcast feed, wherever you get them, look for the OTB LOI wrap-up. Ross Flanagan will have all of the post-match reaction and a review of what happened on Friday night. And Ben Symes will be making his League of Ireland debut this Friday night on our feature match, which is Dundalk versus Shamrock Rovers. He'll be alongside Vinnie Perth. Vinnie, you're with us this afternoon, as is Gareth McGlynn. How you doing, lads?
All right, man, how are we?
Vinny, you still got the special parking spot up at Oriel Park there? Will you be okay for Friday, or should we give the media manager a ring?
Interesting, Steve-O.
VP, okay. You can just go into the vice president's parking space. You can just say, I thought I said Vinny Perth.
Well, since I cleared my desk at the end of 2021, I've not been back to Oriel Park.
What?
Yeah, I've not entered Oriel Park once, so it's funny. For nine and a half years, you know, when you get to work in a place for like 4 or 5 days a week, 6 days a week, all your life. Even the back of the goal, I think I told this story before, the back of the goal was really off-white. It needed to be painted, and we scored a lot of big goals there over the years. And when COVID came, one of the projects I'd done myself was painted the back of the whole goal black because it made it look better, the town end. Mm. So I know every sort of, you know, like things like the tiles, where there's a little crack in the tile somewhere going up the stairs and the changing room walls and everything. I know it all to the inch of my life, but I haven't gone back to it. And obviously when you're getting asked to do certain games or you're being booked to do co-coms, I wasn't sure which game you're going to do. And when I found out it was Dundalk and Oriel Park, it'd be interesting. I imagine I'll have, I don't know what the right word is, but it'd be interesting going up there. I don't know how people will perceive me going back. I don't know that. I can only presume certain bits and pieces. But it will be a little bit emotional, might be too strong of a word, but it will be interesting to walk back into that ground because, as I said, if you're lucky enough to live to 100, I spent 10 years of my life, 10% of my life, going in now that ground, so it will be interesting.
Yeah, I'd say it will be emotional. You enjoyed some really happy days there. And aside from whatever happened at the end, but like yourself and Stephen had some great days, and then yourself as manager win the league and all that, like it's, I'd imagine it would be emotional going back there. And I think as well, sometimes, like you're probably building this up, and I do this myself with, you know, a variety of things where you build something up in your own head. You're kind of thinking, oh no, there's a bit of anxiety there and there's a bit of, you know, going up. But I think once you get there, you'll see some friendly faces and you'll be welcomed.
We'll see. I'm really looking forward to it now. It's taken me a couple of days to get my brain around the fact I'm going back to Oriel Park. As I said, the last time I drove out the ground, I was at the clearing my desk. It was time to move on. I wanted a different chapter of my life, and that's what happened. And I probably wanted to go back to football for a couple of months after that. That's all. Yeah. So I probably expected to go back into football, and I decided to take different pathways. But there's no doubt a huge part of my life and my family's life were spent in and around that ground. So, yeah, I don't know what the right word is, but
yeah,
nervous, but not in a, like, not because anybody or anything, just in my own, I don't know what it is, my own head is just, I'm looking forward to it and I'm apprehensive at the same time. That makes sense. I don't know if it doesn't.
No, it does, absolutely. Would the Brandywell have a similar kind of, like, I know you're kind of there an awful lot, Gareth, but would there be a certain tinge of emotion when you kind of think back to your playing days?
Yeah, of course there is. There always is, no matter when you go to the Brandywell. I went straight in, bought a season ticket straight after I finished, so I was there every year since. But I can imagine it's like anything. If you don't do something or don't rip the band-aid off right away, it just builds and builds and builds. But listen, when Vinny goes back, it'll be all smiles and kisses and butterflies, and it'll be all good, I would imagine. I can't imagine it being anything else. He's not going to get a tomato on the side of the head, let me tell you.
Absolutely. Without a doubt. Well, listen, let's crack on to that Dundalk and Shamrock Rovers game, our feature match this Friday night and Off the Ball from 7 o'clock. And I was interested listening to Stephen Bradley when he spoke to me after the game, lads. You would have heard it there on the montage. But he did say that Roberto Lopez, it looks like he won't be used again before the World Cup. And it's funny, I was only talking to somebody last week about this. I saw Pico Lopez playing in a couple of games over the last few weeks. And my God, I think it was the Bowes game actually at Tallaght Stadium. And he made a diving header clearance from the box at one stage. He's kind of thrown his body all over the place. You know, there's no holding back with this fellow. Like, he wasn't thinking, I've got to make sure I'm going to be okay for the World Cup. Like, it's a mark of the man himself. But is this a wise decision, do you think, Gareth, that Stephen Bradley would take him out now of the firing line? I know, obviously, he's got that knock and we think he's going to be okay, but is that the wise decision?
Yeah, again, we talk about it week in, week out. Stephen Bradley's man management is incredible. I mean, Pico Lopez has given him years and years and years of service. He's played through many an injury, I would imagine. He's now got an opportunity to go and play in a World Cup. That doesn't happen in our league. Very few have done it. He's going to be the one. He's going to be a big part of Cape Verde's team at the World Cup. So, absolutely, it was a brilliant decision by Stephen. And Pico will repay him for the next 4 or 5 years, however long he plays. Right decision. God forbid anything would happen to him. And as you say, Pico doesn't, listen, I was looking to the train with him in 2010. And you just know what he's like. You just know the type of person he is, the character he is. If Stephen Bradley had said, listen, I need you to play right up, he would have done just that. But this is Stephen repaying him, and it's proper order. Again, man management skills, second to none.
Yeah, it's funny. I hadn't seen Enda Stevens playing in the hoops of Shamrock Rovers since before he left for Aston Villa, Vinny. And he was in that back three with Cleary and Lee Grace as the anchor man, which I thought was interesting. And Lee Grace, of course, as we know, was so well experienced, and that role to him is, in particular, is no bother. But there's definitely, you could see with Enda Stevens, while he mightn't have the pace and the explosiveness that he would have had as a younger player, it's that nous that he's built up over his career, playing in the Premier League, playing the Championship, and of course winning all those caps, 26 caps with Ireland. You know, there's no problem with him being in that Shamrock Rovers team either.
No, absolutely not. And I think what's happened well is that he probably wasn't at the match sharpness, and it was good to keep him out of the team until he found that and he trained at a certain level and got to know the Rovers' way of doing things. Remember, we touched on this a couple of weeks ago in terms of he was part of that Chris Wilder team who had this amazing back three, and centre-halves would get forward from different positions. And so he knows that sort of three-boxing midfield type of system really, really well. As you said, he's really experienced. And again, we touched on it already. The options they have in the back three are ridiculous. I mean, if Grace ends up being the one that takes Lopez's position for those number of weeks that he's away, they're not weak. It's because of the quality they have either side, whether it's Stevens, whether it's Cleary. And there's days where they're going to need to play Subawali as the right of the three instead of Cleary, just to give them a bit more run and power from there. So he has huge options there. Really experienced footballers. Remember, Corey O'Sullivan is good and is about to take long term. He's about to take Grace's position. And I keep saying this, Grace is not finished yet. So they've loads of options. Mm. And then the Stevens is like, we're chatting about something on Off the Ball on Saturday. I think people do not give lads credit sometimes when they go to England and the careers they have, in terms of it's not that we look down on those, but we think of lads, if they're not playing the Premiership, what are they in England for? Well, Enda Stevens has had an unbelievable career over there. As you said, 26 caps. He's well able for this level, but you don't just, these ex players or ex internationals don't just arrive in a league. And we've seen a lot of them struggle. There's a couple of examples of it this year. But being able to come into this Rover setup and being biding his time and the manager waiting until he's ready has paid off for him, because in the last couple of weeks, I think he's been excellent for them.
Yeah, still, like, Stephen's a great example for players who go over and it doesn't work out initially for them, because he goes over to Aston Villa from Rovers after great success under Michael O'Neill, Notts County, Doncaster Rovers, Northampton Town, back to Doncaster again for another loan spell. They were all loan spells. Then he moves to Portsmouth, plays a couple of seasons with Portsmouth, and then it's to Sheffield United, where he had his best success, you'd have to say, before going to Stoke for a spell and then returning back to Shamrock Rovers. So it's that thing of, look, it mightn't work out for a player initially when he goes over there, and you're going to have ups and downs. You know, no No line of success is completely, you know, in the ascendancy. You know, you're going to have ups and downs, aren't you, Gareth? And it's, I suppose, it's a mark of Stevens' character as well that he kept at it.
100%, and I was going to touch on that. So many times, I mean, Vinny touched on it there, they go over and they can't mentally deal with the knockbacks. And even in England, even in League of Ireland, players struggle with the knockbacks of maybe it not working out at one club. Maybe it's their club, it's their hometown club, it not working out, and then just falling by the wayside and not having a career at all. But Stephen has had all those clubs. There would have been good times at some of those clubs. There would have been bad times at some of those clubs. But he's able to pick himself up, come back here, as Vinny said, get him in good condition. To be honest with you, I couldn't believe when he went into the Shamrock Rovers team this year how good a condition he was in. And he still has that wee burst. He still has that wee bit of pace, which you would think, oh, at his age, I don't know. But he's still playing. I remember playing against him before he went over. And you just knew, oh, this boy's something special. He's just very composed and he's got a great head on him, makes the right decision. But, I mean, naming all those players at the back that he's going to be playing alongside, that will help as well. There's no question about that. I mean, to me, having Lee Grace beside you, whether it is Stevens or it's Corey O'Sullivan, that's a solid partnership. And if it's end of Stevens and Lee Grace, I mean, I can't see them getting done much on the right-hand side of the opposition with them two boys on the left-hand side. We touched, just to, before we head off on this topic, we touched on Lee Grace at the very start of the season. And I said he was going to be the most pivotal player for Shamrock Rovers. Now he's been injured and he's been in and out, but now it's his time. So it'll be very interesting to see how he plays, being the main guy in the centre of that defence without Pico beside him.
Yeah, now, actually, we maybe pick up on that because it's not all sunshine and roses, say. Like, that's, I see this one performance by Rovers against Galway United with those three as the back three, Vinny. It wasn't perfect either, you know, and Galway United, the supporters stayed back after the game. They were applauding the team off the pitch because they actually played really well. And there were times that Rovers defence didn't look great. You know, there were times where Grace was kind of nearly, you know, clashing with Ed McGinty, that he was that deep. And this is going to be a big couple of months for him as a player to be anchoring that back three. If it's him put in the middle, which you think you'd imagine it is going to be. They're going to get bigger challenges. And not to mention against Dundalk this weekend, because like we know what Arubi can do, we know what Daryl Horgan can do, we know what Owen Kenny can do. There's some real attacking threat in that Dundalk forward line.
Yeah, I think it's important to, well, you can wax lyrical about Shamrock Rovers, it's important to say the one thing I think people are missing is there is a bit of a transition going on at Rovers. Whether it's not just the young players, and we all know they're very, very good young footballers, but there is a bit of a transition going on and there is vulnerability about them, and it's up to others to go and beat them. So it's a bit why I'm always critical of the teams going and matching Rovers up, and we've seen Pats do it a number of weeks ago, playing that box of midfield and matching them up. So if you think about this week, and we spoke about last week, where Galway can hurt them in terms of whether it was Franz Pirro or whoever was going to start for them, is Horgan and Kenny this week, there is vulnerability around their back three. And if the two of them staying high and wide and the Ruby gives Grace problems, Roberts can still hurt you. They've got quality in Bourne, midfield, Ozzavuna, we all know that they'll dominate the ball, but there is vulnerability around their back three, and taking their main man out of it does weaken them, can't get away from it. They still have some quality there, so it's not all sunshine and roses. Do I expect him to get through this over the sort of period he's away? Yes, but if I was in Dundalk shoes, I would have a right cut off them this week. And I think the best thing you can do is show Rovers youth respect 100%, but the same breath, don't give them respect, too much respect, and go and get at their back three this weekend. So you're right to point it out, and it's something I believe in. I would even go as far as saying play Kenny and Horgan higher than the Ruby, and then see what Cleary and Stevens does in the wide areas. You know, there's a real challenge. And Dundalk haven't come away from their DNA all season. So I just hope they don't do it this weekend against Rovers.
And funny you say that, funny. Yeah, the best I've ever seen Grace in the last, well, since he's been with Rovers was 2 years ago at the end of the season. He was phenomenal. I thought he was actually better than Pico at that stage. And there was a time in the Brandywell when Michael Duffy was giving Cleary a hard time. They put Grace over on top of him, and Grace never gave him a snuff. He was phenomenal. He was playing at the left back for an hour, and then the rest of the match right of the three. He was unbelievable, and that's the comfort that Stephen Bradley has. If they can get Lee Grace, we don't know because he's been in and out this season, but if they can get him back to those levels, I mean, it's just business as usual at the back for Rovers. But it's over the next two or three games. Let's see where he's at.
Remember, they won the league, or around that time, they won the league against Pats away. That was the time Grace was absolutely outstanding. I remember that game in particular, being at it. He, you know, there's times where, and even as an opposition manager, I hope he doesn't mind me saying this, Grace, there's times where I felt he could get at Grace with certain players, and there's other times he's been the best defender they've had. Mm. He's gone through these little moments, and it's not that you felt you could get at Grace because he was a problem. It was around the setup of the team. So wherever his wing back was, if his wing back wasn't a defensive minded one, I felt as an opposition coach I could get at him. So, but at the same time, there's times he's been the best defender of the three of them there. There's times Lopez has been the more consistent, and there's times Cleary's been brilliant. They have it all, and they have it all in backup. But to make the point against them, they're vulnerable at times if you're brave enough to go and get at them.
Yeah, yeah, it's part of us want them to be vulnerable and want to see cracks in the armor. That's the beauty of it. But don't get me wrong, this is going to be a tough time for them. Having their leader not there in the center of that back three, that's not going to be easy.
Yeah, and we saw like the goal for Galway United was from a corner kick set piece, and that's something that Pico excels at when it comes to organisation and all that kind of stuff, and his own defensive capabilities. And looking back at the last Dundalk Rovers game, like it finished 1-1 at Tallaght Stadium. I think, were you at that game, Vinny? I think you were,
yeah,
weren't you?
Yeah.
And like it was the Dundalk team. You look at it, was Groom, Dervin in midfield, it Horgan on the left, and then it was Tehan McDade behind Arubi. So look, not to knock any other players, but like if they've got Horgan and Kenny, you know, Dervin, maybe you could, like, would they throw Keith Buckley in there maybe for a big game like this? I don't know, but like you could say arguably they might have a stronger team, albeit Dundalk coming into this off not such a good run at the moment.
Yeah, I think you might see Buckley in midfield there. Dervin gives them huge energy, particularly at home, and what that does is that gives, where that's key for what Killers is trying to do, is it gives them a platform to allow that three up front to work their magic. And there's no point in having three really good players if what's behind you isn't good enough or solid enough. And you don't need to be the best players in them two number six positions, but they certainly need to give you a platform. And to be fair to Buckley and Dervin, they do that. Like, I mean, Dundalk lost last week to Bowles, and I think the right team won the game. But Dundalk started the game very well, like, you know, made a couple of errors at wrong times, but they were right in that game. The Cromwell sending off, did it have an effect? Of course it did, in terms of the scoreline 3-1 and Dundalk getting back into it. But up until that, it was nip and tuck between both sides.
Well, that actually brings me on to the major talking point around Dundalk I wanted to bring up, and it is the red card. They had a man sent off at Tallaght Stadium as well. Vinnie Leonard got two yellows. I know Perel Vinnie's going through a bit of an illness at the moment, so if he's listening or whatever, I hope he does get better soon. But there was a red card in that game at Tallaght Stadium. In fact, they've had four reds this season, one suspension served by A. Dervin. They've got three players and four yellows going into this match. Maybe it's not an issue, but it kind of feels like it is, Vinnie. Like if you're, you know, losing players to red cards, like they could have got the win in Tallaght Stadium if they'd had 11 men on the field until the 90 minutes. As you said, maybe the red card last week affected the results. And is that something Kilduff needs to look at? Or is it just a symptom of the way Dundalk played, that if he tells the players, I need you to be careful on the discipline, that they're going to lose something in the way they play?
It's probably too early of a snapshot in time. Over the season, we'll see how that balances out, but he does need to address it. You can't continuously do this all season and not to impact your results. Like, one of the things I said about Dundalk is I feel they would win three or four games, but I could see them going on a bad run of three or four games as well. And that's why having those points in the bag is really important to a side like Dundalk, because, you know, there's not a lot between Dundalk and maybe all the way down to Sligo and in second bottom or Drogheda, them type of teams. I think Dundalk are better than one or two of them, but there's not a lot between them. So you can't let a lack of discipline creep in. I mean, the Cornwall sending off, in one sense, that one, to be fair, you're nearly unlucky, if you know what I mean. Garrett will tell you this maybe, or agree or disagree, but as a player, sometimes someone gets the wrong side of you and you don't actually trip him. His leg movement trips you. It's still a penalty and it's still denying a goal scoring chance. But sometimes them ones are just a little bit unlucky. But go back to the way they play, and you touched on that. Eric Dervin, the way he took out Keane Leave, should have been a red card. So they've got away with one or two as well. So they do play on the edge, absolutely. They play with intensity, but you can't continue to do that over a season. And it has to start balancing out. And the team, top of the sort of in discipline charts at the end of the season, are never the team that wins the league. Starters. That's rule number one. Mm. So you're not going to win at, and now Dundalk aren't in the title race this per se, but it's the best example you can make. Why is discipline part of the team? The team that wins the league never, ever wins the in-discipline league either. So you've got to sort it out.
I wasn't going to ask Gareth about this one because I was thinking, you know, Gareth's far too nice and clean cut to be talking about. He doesn't know anything about cars or whatever, but quick look. I don't know how accurate this is, but I've got you down for 3 red cards. Gareth, that'd be right in your career.
One too many.
I got one in the FAI Cup, one in the Premier Division. You got 16 yellows in your... That wasn't bad out of a career of nearly 300 games. It was 299 games I have you down for on transfer mark there. I'm not sure how accurate that is.
What did you get down for? Wasn't for making the tackle.
Red card for Derry City. Now, you see, he never got sent off.
Celebrating, funny.
Never got sent
taking
off a
top
pose.
Off, lad.
It was always that dirty Derry City team that he was getting sent off. Seskia Sofia, do you remember that one?
That was a red card, but it was European referee as well. It was a simple, they would call it a calculated yellow these days. It was counter-attack. Stephen actually just put me on. I was raging that he dropped me. The boy's gone past me and I've just gone and kind of lunged at him, but the referee just came out red card. Let's just say Stephen got the hairdryer out after that. I was mortified. It was a long walk up the Brandywell. You remember it used to be, you had to walk past the dog track the side. Oh, the longest walk ever.
Oh my God. That's it.
Who was that one against, Garrett?
Sofia.
I was there, actually. I was at that game. And I had gone to Sofia the week before to scout them for you. Yeah. Nobody really knew that at the time. There you go.
Hey, we were still in the game as well. He was fuming.
Yeah, it was what was it? The first leg was 1. What was it there? Was it 1-0, 1-1? It was 1-0, 1-1 were the two legs anyway. So you just lost it by a goal. It wasn't.
Exactly. Yeah. No, we were
they,
well in it.
They scored from distance as well, if I remember, did they?
They did a rocket. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was G Max throwing his toys out of the pram red card for Derry City. let's move on then to the other night's matches on Friday night. Well, in fact, actually, we'll jump to Saturday night because there's a big Connacht derby taking place. And the fact that we were watching Galway United last week, there was one man, though, I wanted to pay tribute to before we really get into the game, Conor McCormack, what a player. You know, like it was. Like to lose your two centre backs ahead of a game against Shamrock Rovers, like they obviously knew about Facinieri and the build up to it. Bruder got a bug the morning of the game, so that wasn't ideal. But they decided to bring Conor McCormack in to play centre half along with Wasiri Williams. Now, I know Wasiri has played in that position before, so it wasn't a huge, something new for him, but I thought he played very well. In fact, on the night, he's a big unit, is Wasiri Williams. And he'd be well able to play there this season if he needs to. But Conor McCormack, you look at the career that he's had. He's got nearly 300 Premier Division games. He's got coming up to 100 First Division games. He's been around so long. He was on that great Shamrock Rovers team back in 2011 under Mick O'Neill, winning the Premier Division title. He's just been one of those mainstays in the league. Vinny, you know Conor McCormack pretty well, I'd imagine.
Yeah. obviously competed against him for a long time. He was he's close to being, and I hope this doesn't sound disrespectful, he's close to being League of Ireland's James Milner, you know what I mean, by that in terms of you get what you see is what you get, you feel out of him. And I've obviously never worked with him as a coach, but played against him or was against him so many times over many years that you always know what you're getting out of Cormac. Wherever he plays, like you said, he played centre half to the day, he's played at right back, he's played in midfield over his career. He is a Dundalk man, even though he was part of a huge rivalry against Dundalk. So, yeah, really, really good player. And I hope that's seen as a compliment, but there's a James Milner about him. He has that longevity. You always feel he's right there in terms of his fitness levels. To be able to do what he's doing at his age tells you he looks after himself, has a little bit of that leadership, not the big Terry Butcher style, but he has it underneath in terms of, you can tell he sets certain standards in training. That, so that's why he's able to do what he does. And you imagine if John Caulfield's having him around at multiple clubs, tell you he's a good guy around the place and tells you he works hard. So really good pro. And he's had a great career. He's won league titles, as you said, FAI Cups, and he's still doing his business. Fair play to him. It's a wonderful achievement to be still doing what he's doing and after what he's had as a career.
Yeah, 35 years of age. He'll be 36 in 5 days' time, I think it is. I'd say he's a man that could probably keep playing for another couple of years as well. I'm sure he will if he can. And I thought he did a really good job coming on at centre-back or playing centre-back for them when they needed him. But I'm sure John Caulfield, Gareth, will be hoping going to Sligo Rovers that he's got hopefully Killian Bruder back after that bug. But I think they can take great confidence that performance against Rovers on Friday night.
Yeah, 100%. And that's what it's all about. I mean, we've gone through all the teams. There's nobody, bar maybe Rovers and Pats, running away with this. There's all inconsistency. And when you are beaten, you've got to look at the performances. You've got to look at the defensive unit, the midfield, the attackers, how many chances you create. The league can be deceiving. It can be one or two moments within games that end up deciding it, whether it be a sending off, whether it be a tackle, whether it be a bit of brilliance. But having people like Conor McCormick about you, it just enables that sort of consistency that you need in League of Ireland. But listen, John's been around enough. He'll know what he's going to go up to when he goes up to Sligo. It's a massive match, I mean, if Sligo already won that, that would bring them above Galway. But likewise, if Galway had won that, that brings them right up into fifth, depending on results. So it's so tight there, bar Waterford. But Galway, they'll thrive on that. Obviously, the pitches will be a wee bit better now as well. So Sligo at home might be a bit of a different animal. But Galway have no board. And listen, if Conor McCormick has to play centre half, I was fortunate enough to play with Conor in 2016. No matter where he plays, he's probably the same height as me. If you put him in nets, he's going to play 8 out of 10. It does not matter. He's just that type of player. And you can't have too many of those type of people about you. And that's, as you say, why John has brought him about so much.
Yeah. Did you ever lose a couple of players on the day of a match, Vinny, when you picked your team and you had your game plan set and you were ready to go?
Yeah, more on the minus one day. The other time, I think we've had the one on the day of a game where someone gets sick, or I remember we were going to Latvia in the Champions League game and Michael Duffy's missus decided to have a baby, like, just as we were about to fly off, like the cheek. Or going to labour, should I say, the cheek of her, like, how dare she? But
Roy Keane there at the side.
Yeah.
Malahide.
So
yeah.
I actually was asked the question by Tony O'Donoghue and I couldn't resist it. And I said, he's not having the baby, is he? So it was taken the way it was meant. But it does upset you, because nowadays the minus one training session day is so important. Like, there was a time where when I started playing, when Gareth started playing, like, you probably knew the team when you got to the ground. Now it's very clear, the minus one day, players know their jobs, roles, responsibilities. You go to bed, the odd manager and the odd time you might keep something a little bit back from match day if you're not sure about which forward you're going to start, but by and large the players know. And When that gets upset, then that throws a whole team out of shape, because you've worked on, say, one of your centre halves making a run towards the front post, and that releases somebody the back post from a set piece, for argument's sake. Mm. And the knock-on effect for that is small, but it's big in the grand scheme of things. Or he might be marking, you know, their biggest centre half, and the chain of events mean three people have to change their marking by one player missing. So it's not helpful at all, and it wouldn't have been in any way, shape, helpful for Galway on match day. So it's really disappointing. And when it happens, it messes your head up. Most of the other players are fine, but it does mess the coach's head up because of, as I said, so many different moving parts to the organisation of the team.
I've been kind of gauging a bit of reaction around Sligo Rovers, kind of talking to people around the club. There was a goal they scored on Friday night against Shelburne, and I've looked at it many times, Gareth, and look, I know we don't have the same kind of camera angles in the League of Ireland as we might be lucky to have when we're watching on TV in other leagues, but that to me looked like an onside goal. What did you think of it?
Yeah, as you say, listen, I only watched the highlights. I was away last week, but it looked like a goal. There's no question in my mind. Granted, we don't have the angle, but it also looked like a good game. I mean, I know a lot of people were saying Shells battered them and they were all over them. Sligo had some good chances. I mean, I know it was Deehan, I think it was the 85th minute. I mean, he finds himself in the left-hand side of the penalty box. He chops back like a centre-forward. He's got it in his right foot. All he's got to do is side-foot it into the corner, past Spiel, and he kind of gets too much on it and goes wild. Now, don't get me wrong, Shells went up there and had a header with Bone, but Sligo weren't that bad against Shelburne, and we all know what can happen and what the quality that Shelburne have. They've got some unbelievable players. They're going to put you under pressure for large periods of games. But Sligo did hit them on the break. Meekinson looked okay. Again, Fitzgerald's playing really well. And Sargent made a couple of great saves, especially from Coote. So Sligo will be good. They'll see a way to Shells. They'll be putting that at the beginning of the year. They'll be saying, if we get a point there, that'll be a very, very good result. Then they'll see Galway at home. Now on Saturday, they'll be turning around going, right, there's an opportunity for 3 points. And not only that, how many places we're going to jump if we do get the 3 points. So Sligo will take some confidence from the game. Make no bones about it.
Like, depending on the results above them, they could go up 3 places. But if the referee had allowed that goal to stand, they could have had a 1-0 win. They could have 2 points more on the board. They'd be on 18. They'd be above Galway United. Galway United would be down in the second from bottom position. They'd be level on points with Shelburne. And who knows where they could end up after a win against Galway United this weekend. I think there is a feeling around Sligo Rovers, Vinny, that they're getting the rough end of the stick here way too often. Like that there's, you know, that, and listen, do you know something? I say that, like, talking to people around Sligo Rovers, it's not just that they're, I think this, you get this in all leagues, don't you, where smaller clubs do feel like the bigger clubs get those decisions sometimes. But there have been a few decisions that have gone against Sligo Rovers this season. And, like, there are two valuable points that could be the difference between them finishing eighth or having to play the relegation playoff at the end of the season. Would you kind of empathise with their feeling of injustice maybe across the first few weeks of the season?
No. Bad football. That's my view. I mean, I watched the goal back. I don't think it was a travesty of a decision. I watched it back about 40 times over the weekend. And it was actually, and I was on the LOI app, and I was pausing it, and the play button kept coming up exactly where I wanted to see it. So I was screen grabbing it, trying. I'm presuming that the Lions man, and I think the Lions man was one of the very experienced ones. I won't give out his name in case I'm wrong. It was a touch and go one from what I was looking at. I'm okay with decisions that are touch and go. Do you know what I mean by that? In terms of fall either way, I'm okay with certain things where referees, some people think it was onside, some think it was offside. I'm okay with that because that's what the game is about. Unless we bring in VAR, you have to accept that's part of the game. it's early in the season. It's no different than Dundalk's discipline. It's early in the season to be saying that they're not getting the rub of the green. The reason why Rovers probably will give away less penalties than other teams this season is teams aren't in their box as much, and they're in opposition's box as much. I used to say this about the great Liverpool team of the late 80s, early 90s, win huge amount of penalties, yeah, because they're in their box all the time. So, yeah, I'm not so sure it is as clear-cut as they think. I know, I understand that's what you do, that's the way your makeup is as a club. When it's not, when you're down the bottom, you feel like everything's gone against you. But I don't think it's as bad as that. I genuinely don't.
Yeah, and look, that's fair enough. And I don't think, I certainly don't think the manager, John Russell, would be, holding a gripe until the end of the season. And he knows himself that his team is playing well. They're in good form and, on a short
And sorry, on that, Steve-O, the one thing they've done is, and what they've done very well over the years, I think people miss this. Like, if you think of Fitzgerald and Elding playing wide off a striker in the last couple of years, they've always had that way. Mickelson comes in now. Mm. So Mickelson and Fitzgerald weren't good enough, for want of a better word, for Bowles and Derry. But they've gone in there and look really good because of the way Russell has the playing. Yeah. And that style he has suits the two of them. And they've been really good at it. Fitzgerald, Eric waxed lyrical about him a week or two ago, and rightly so. But Fitzgerald is a hell of a good dribbler. I think Derry made a mistake. It might have been Rory letting go. I think he would have been brilliant off the bench for them, because that dribbler all close to his feet and an impact player off the bench for Derry when you're going for a league title. I think he had something about him. Higgins, horses for courses, didn't think so. Mm-hmm. But the two of them are very, very good for Sligo in what they're trying to do. And the hardest thing in football to defend against is still a dribbler. Because when they get bossed up to the feet and they take it on, defenders don't like that.
The one thing, Vinny, and you would experience it, and I experienced it as a player, the more creative players, the wingers, the talent, the supposed talented players at the final third of the pitch, they always seem to be hit or miss off the bench. But he is unbelievably consistent. We talk about Conor McCormick in that sitting midfield. Doing what he does week in, week out is probably a little bit easier. But being on it all the time, when you're not playing week in, week out as an attacking player, where you have that subconscious where you're just in the moment, that's way more difficult. But he seems to do it as ease. And by the way, he seems to be able to do it when he's playing left back, left midfield, right midfield, or coming off the bench. And as a manager, the same as Conor McCormick, it must be incredibly rewarding to be able to say, I don't care what stage Will is or where he's at mentally, I know exactly what I'm going to get when he gets onto the pitch. Just a real asset to Sligo.
Yeah, absolutely. And as Vinny, you alluded to, there's certainly, it's noticeable how players like Archie Meekison and Fitzgerald and even thinking of McManus as well in midfield, how much they've come on under the coaching of John Russell. He really is doing a fine job there. And I think it's going to be a hard-fought battle on Saturday night against Galway United in the Connacht Derby. That one is on Saturday evening and it's at the Showgrounds. Looking ahead to the other games on Friday night, and we are about to see the best squad in Ireland go to Inchicore and take on St. Patrick's Athletic. I do, of course, refer to the quotes from Joey O'Brien after his side's draw against Shelburne on Friday night. Gareth, that was something that caught your eye, isn't it? I think Joey said, quote, "I genuinely believe we have the best squad in the country."
Yeah, and funny, I said it about 4 weeks ago, if you remember, and then they went on a horrendous run ever since. I said the squad that they had, and it was the 20 minutes that I saw live against Derry up in Tolka. They were unbelievable, really, really good. And I just don't know. I can say it definitely because it doesn't affect my job. Saying that when you're under pressure, I don't know if Joey would admit, but you have to appreciate his honesty as well. But the talent that they have is incredible. We all talked about defensively not being good enough and giving up easy goals and all that. I think defensively they've got some good players as well. But again, I don't know what's wrong. We talked about it, I think it was 2 weeks ago, about the lack of intensity and energy. And this comes back to Kilduff and Dundalk, and you were saying about being on the edge. I think they've come away from that since Duff's left. They're not playing on the edge enough, and the creative players are not playing on the edge enough as well. It's as if they're too methodical. It comes back to the time I was talking about when Fleming went down injury. They weren't able to game manage the game. They weren't able to play off the cuff, and all those players, Jarvis, Wood, Coote, I mean, those players surely are at the best when they play off the cuff. It just seems way, way too structured for those types of players. But I mean, how they're not winning more games is beyond me when you look at the squad. And I tend to agree with Joey. I just think they're far too good to be sitting seventh with only 18 points from 15 games.
I'm not going to dig out any individual players, but you mentioned players there, Gareth, and like I've watched a few of their games over the last few weeks, sometimes just the highlights, and I see players from Shelburne perhaps doing what Damien Duff said on TV a couple of weeks ago that they were doing, and that is letting their manager down. You know, defensively, you've got attacking players maybe not doing their defensive duties when they're defending their box. And I do feel that Duff kind of hit on something there, that maybe, you know, it's not just down to the manager. The players are letting the manager down. And added to that as well, Duff isn't the only missing ingredient here. And there's another missing ingredient. That's Mark Coyle. Now, understand, they got a fee for Mark Coyle and they had to let him, well, there was a feeling they had to let him go. I don't know. But I just wonder if his departure is coming back to haunt them as well.
But Steve-O, I think this is another good example of transition and change the style of play. There's no doubt in my mind that Damien Duff played a different way than Joey O'Brien. And if you want to change the way you play to a more controlled, possession-based game, then maybe you need to let the likes of Mark Coyle, and that's no disrespect to Mark, but they had to make a choice. They had JJ Lunny in there. They had McEnroy and Francis. It's impossible to keep them all. So you just got to change. I agree with you. That aggressive style, that combative style, they don't have enough of that. Now, when you change that style, it does take time. You can't just go on one day and go automatically, boom. I talk about Derry City's style all the time. There's a massive, massive change from the way Rory Higgins played to the way Tiernan Lynch played. And it takes time to get it right, and it needs to get right, and you need to change the players. That's why Derry have changed most of the squad. But with Shells, they've tried to change, and it just hasn't worked as well as I had have thought as well, because the signings have been good enough and they look like more of a technical team now, but it just hasn't worked for them on the pitch. And they haven't scored enough goals, and in that they've conceded way more goals. So do I think Joey's under pressure? Absolutely. It's a results game, but I don't think they need to hit the panic button. I just don't agree with changing the manager after a short period of bad results.
Unbeaten in three, Vinny. There's been somewhat of a comeback. What are you thinking?
I don't think he's the best squad in the country. I think Allah, there's no doubt about that. Anyone that doesn't think that, you're wrong. Have they got a really good squad? Yes. This squad that should be doing better than where they are, 100% yes. Have injuries played a part in that? Yes. But that's where, and you know, I think very, very highly of Joey. I think Damien started this transition. That's where I slightly disagree with Gareth. I think he came away from what they won the league with. Maybe they felt he had to, playing with a back three and different things. Not sure. But when you look at the quality you have throughout, like, I accept Mark Coyle is a huge loss, but I think Kieran McEnroy does a very similar role to him and is technically better at certain things. You add in Henry Francis to that. So the staff, whatever about Dufford's comments are a pro Joey, because that's his best mate now in life and all of that stuff. He's fine, not mind him making them. But as a management, as a staff, you've got to get better use out of the team. Even if Joey's right, they are the best squad in the country. They're not the best team in the country. And why aren't they the best team? Spiel has come off it 100%. This time last year, I thought he was better than everybody else. Barrett's being injured, Casey's being injured. Get all of that stuff. but they're not performing. So the manager has to take, that's your job. That's why you take them roles. They're not nice and pleasant. It's not nice for me to say it. I'm sitting, as I always say, in the cheap seat commenting on them. But he has to take responsibility for it, because what they're doing is not working. It's not just the player's fault. Some of it's down to systems and structure. So if Joey's right, you've the best squad in the country, fine, you can think that. You haven't got the best team in the country, and you don't have the best structure in the country. They're getting done. They're getting outworked sometimes, and they're getting done in set pieces quite often, and they're giving away leads. So they've got to change something. Can't keep doing the same thing and expecting different results. That's my view.
Okay. Well, they do take on the St. Pat's side, who have two very key players back, and we always kind of felt that this was a huge hindrance to Pat's performances over the last number of weeks. Zach Elbazetti, he's got 5 appearances since he's come back from his latest injury. In his 8 appearances this season, he's got 3 goals and 3 assists, but they were all in his last 3 matches. And then you've got Rommel Palmer, who's missed the last 5 games. He played 12 minutes off the bench in that brilliant win at the weekend on Friday night, of course. They came from behind to beat Waterford. He's played 11 matches this season. He's got 3 goals and an assist. Those two players back. And this is a huge test, I think, for not just having those two players back, but for Pat's title credentials. They've got Shells at the weekend, obviously, followed by Derry City away. Shamrock Rovers away. So this is, I think this is where we really find out a lot about St. Pat's, Vinny, over the next 2 weeks.
I think Chris Forrester as well, whether that's used sparingly, I think he's so important to them. I think the week before was a big dent in what they're trying to achieve. We spoke about that Friday, Monday, where they didn't pick up the 6 points in winnable games. Huge for them. I think this is a big game for both teams for different reasons. Both of them, I feel, need to win the game. The draw is probably not good enough. And some will say, well, that's harsh, and Shells going to Pats and only drawing saying it's not good enough. They need to be getting back into competing at very minimum for European spots this year. But going back to Pats, I mean, Watford started well. Pats rolled their luck once or twice, but once they took over, they were exceptional. Like Elbazetti, as you touched on, Keane Levy has just been brilliant to watch.
Yeah.
I love him. Love watching him. I think the certain players that I'd pay in just to watch alone, Keane Levy's up there as one of them now. He's getting to that stage. Again, another dribbler, loves the ball at his feet. But what Keane has started to add now is a bit of real game intelligence. Like, he can pick out a really good pass. He can attract 2 or 3 players. So if you think about it, 10 outfield players, you attract 3 of them to you. That's 30% of the opposition team have come away from their own men, and you release the ball. I know that's a real simple way of looking at it. You look at his assists. His assist last week, really good. He's a joy to watch. Edmondson, real joy. I think Aidan Keane, that injuries that they're picking up, it's been, I'm not sure whether you've announced what it is or not. He's a big blow because he was really finding his rhythm as well. So, but the strength and depth in the Pat squad is there to mount the challenge. But they've got to win games like this. These Dublin derbies are huge for them. And not let Rovers get away from them. They've got to put pressure on Shamrock Rovers. And that means winning this week is huge.
Move like with a view to looking at the Waterford Derry game. We'll get Gareth's thoughts on it, obviously. But what were your first impressions of Waterford watching them at Inchicore, Vinny, under Graham Coughlin? Coco?
I think I listened to his interview as well. It was like he didn't know who he was coaching. And why would he? It was only 2 days, but like, he wasn't prepared yet. Didn't know the league. I said that would be a problem, but I expect him to be better this week on the back of it. It was difficult for them. I thought he started the game well, all of them bits and pieces. He obviously got reaction. He had 2 days in the training ground with them. I think we'll find out this week whether he's made any significant changes or not.
Did he go 4-2-3-1? As we were kind of.
And I think that's the best way of playing for them. The reason for that is they've got to start to be hard to beat. And when you play 4-2-3-1, if your two number sixes give you that defensive balance, then that's a platform. As the games they develop, and even the next game they play, when you're comfortable in it, Watford haven't been outplayed by a lot of teams. They've been in games. Mm. You slowly edge one of your fullbacks forwards and you join in and you get braver as the game develops, or if you're chasing. But the first thing they've got to be is hard to beat. And I think Graham will insist that from them. He's brought in another coach as well. I think the next couple of weeks are more the test than the fourth game. He didn't know his players. He done an interview where he said, our boy, I think he said at one stage, because I think genuinely didn't remember the name of the player that he was talking about. So that's good, but that's the challenge of applying somebody from outside the league. Will take him a week or two to get up to speed. So this week is huge for him.
Yeah, I'd imagine he'll have a better feel for his squad and his players this week. And it's a kind of a tricky one for Tiernan Lynch, isn't it, Gareth? Because he doesn't really know what he's going to be facing. Like, I know he would have seen that game at Inchicore last week. I'm sure he's watched it since. But this is it's a dangerous kind of game for Tiernan Lynch, who has somewhat kind of rescued Derry City's form. Like, funnily enough, I'm not too sure which social media platform, we've had a Derry supporter who's been kind of on us about saying, poorly researched on Derry City, this is terrible, the team is awful, you know, like, it's not good. And like, to be fair, I was looking at the form table last night over the last 10 games, Derry City, the fourth best side in the league based on the last four matches. Now, that's to say Shamrock Rovers are kind of streets ahead of everybody else at the top based on those last 10 games. But it's not been desperate over the last few weeks for Derry City. But as I said, this is a tricky game for them, going all the way down to the RSE, a long, long trip.
Yeah, you can't win. If they go and 1-2 or 3-0, it's expected of them. If they go and draw, it's just not good enough. I mean, Waterford are sitting with 6 points. Derry should be looking at this. And I said it, and I've said it probably 2 or 3 times in the podcast, is I don't worry about Derry City when they play against Rovers, Pats, Shells, Bows. It's the lesser teams that Derry struggle. And that's just the style that Tiernan Lynch has employed. Even last year when he finished second, he was going well. He won these games by the odd goal. You're never going to go and see them play like Pats, where they play two attacking wing backs with 4 or 5 attacking players. It's just not his style. I mean, he played one of the matches last weekend without a striker, and he had Depot and Josh Thomas on the bench. So, does it matter that he doesn't know what he's up against? I don't really think so. I think if he can down there, Tiernan's going to keep it nice and compact, nice and solid. Hope to get a set piece or a mistake or a bit of genius off Michael Duffy. But Waterford are going to be.
Gareth, before you go any further, what's that playing the no striker all about?
Well, you need to ask the manager, Vinny. I have no idea. It seems to me that he doesn't believe in either players. I mean, he only brought Josh on at the end of the 92nd minute against Drogheda when he needed a goal. I mean, he obviously hasn't got the confidence in him. He's bringing Depot in and out. He's playing James Clark as a striker. Now, we know he did play as a striker for Bows at times, but he was unbelievable in the last 3 or 4 games in that 10, and now he just brings him out of position again. Again, he keeps moving the team about. As a player, it has to be so, so, so frustrating to be able to do that. And can you imagine being a striker away to a side that is supposedly at the bottom half of the table? You're going, when am I going to get on? When am I going to score some goals here? I just don't know. And I don't know what team he's going to play in against Waterford.
Clark did work as a back nine for Bows. Like, mate, is that something he was trying to tap into?
But he's been playing so well, Steve-O, as a 10. I mean, he got his goal against Rovers. He was very good against Rovers. Mm. He had been playing well, getting comfortable. It's a new team, new surroundings. Why would you, when he's comfortable and scoring goals, why would you move him again?
Mm. Is it just to get Markey into the team? Is that the problem then?
Well, Markey and him were playing against Rovers and playing in the match after that. They were the two tens in the box midfield with a striker up front. It was going fine. Now, again, I'm not privy to injuries and knocks and all that. Maybe the two strikers weren't fit and he had to do it. But if the two of them were fit and the two of them came on, you've got to play a recognised striker, especially against Drogheda. I mean, from what I hear about the game, and I didn't see the game, I saw the highlights, Derry were just playing it around it in front of Drogheda, who were happy enough, and then obviously hit them in the break and got their penalty and won the match. So God knows what's going to happen against Waterford now on Friday night.
Okay. It's overcoaching, it's overthinking, it's whatever you're seeing a year ago from James Clark playing for Bowles or however long, it shouldn't come into your mind. He had started to find a way of playing that 4-2-3-1 with one striker, two, like Adam O'Reilly done really well for him, Winchester does really well for him, sitting in front of him. It gives him that platform we spoke about earlier. Mm. And then just to change it all again after trying a three earlier on the season, trying all these different shapes. I don't know whether it's the modern coach now that is eating too many coach manuals. I don't know what it is, but
As a player, exactly. I mean, as a player, there's nothing more kind of soul destroying than the indecision at the top, which is the leader, which is the manager. I'm not taking this from the Derry players, but for me, when I played under the good managers that I played with, got the best out of me, I knew exactly where I stood, and I knew exactly on a Friday whether I should be playing or I shouldn't be playing, going on the previous games in the previous week's training session.
But you also knew your job, Gareth. And yeah. So if you whatever about something changes. So if you're a mid-table team, right, you may play a 4-2-3-1. That's fine. But when you play against the top team, you might hold on to your wingers a little bit more. So be almost like a 4-5-1. If that makes sense. And then when you play the team that are at the bottom, it might be more of that 4-3-3 team you've got to win. There's subtle changes. Everyone tactically changes. You're not coaching nowadays, but you're not subtly changing. But to go from three at the back to false nines to inverted fullbacks, to inverted wingers we're seeing now in the game,
yeah,
it is just absolutely destroying the players. It's just destroying their ability to find their rhythm, and the very best teams play the same way. They make subtle changes, of course you do. The best example of it is Rovers. They play with the box in midfield, and then there's times they don't. They play with the two up front. But it's very subtle changes.
Yeah.
The best teams do that.
Yeah.
So well, I'm not sure you need to be doing what they do.
It kind of brings us nicely on to the last game of the week, which we won't spend too much time on because we've got to wrap up here. But inverted fullbacks, it might be something that Bohemians fans have seen their team doing this season. DJT, though, Douglas James Taylor, was he a player you wanted to touch on, GMAC, before we move
goal
off?
Goal scoring machine, Steve-O. Feed him and he will score. And I'm going to touch on something else as well. If you watch, and I just saw the highlights again.
Sorry, Douglas James Taylor, I should say, to give him his full Douglas title. James,
Tierney getting into the box, unbelievable. In the box, he was just doing it constantly. It was absolutely brilliant. And then that frees him up, Douglas James Taylor, to find the space. It occupies the other centre half. So if he does get the ball, he's 1-on-1 instead of get 2-v-1. Unbelievable by Tierney. Got the goal, got the penalty, got the sending off. And actually, as I was watching the other games and the highlights, there was far more people getting into the box. I think it was the Dundalk game. Ave Dervin in the box. You had Deegan or Denham for Sligo. There was loads more of that. Douglas James Taylor needs his wingers and the centre midfielder getting beyond him and creating space for him. You can't expect him to score 15 to 20 goals against three centre halves or two centre halves and just trying to battle that himself.
So, couldn't agree more. Yeah, look, that's the old Ross Tierney. That's the old Ross Tierney and Georgie double act that there used to be a couple of years ago, I suppose.
And maybe it was being dropped last week, giving the kick up the Irish to get back to doing the basics.
Yeah. Maybe playing him in his right position instead of narrow off the right.
Nah, you have to give Rennie credit now.
No, give him a bit of credit.
Come on.
I'm not having
credit
to go with anybody, but play people in their right positions. Ross Tierney, at his very best, plays number 10. And like you said, he runs into boxes. Mm. I call it punching holes in defence. And you know what it's like? If someone runs past you four times, you go with them. And you're expecting them to run. You keep moving back. You move back and creates a little pockets of space in front of you. And he's played narrow off the right. Dale Rooney out and out winger. If you want James Taylor, who I've sort of been not critical of, I just want to go, where's this goal machine we're all talking about? I know we got a penalty the other day. Dale Rooney, get him to the end line, cross the ball. Don't divert him. Don't divert him. And he played in midfield against Derry. They played 4-4-2 in the fourth half against Derry. So we're critical of Tiernan Lynch. Let's call a spade, changing the shape. Bowles played a 4-4-2 against Derry. Didn't work. Changed at halftime. Ross Tierney changed it. Being in his natural position. Then they went up to Dundalk and they were poor in the first half. And they changed it back to a 4-4-2. So, like a point guard, if you're a player in that system, what are you involved in? You're playing earlier on the season, they were inverted, the Bowles were inverting the fullbacks. This year, they're inverting the wingers to try and get Senna Mullen high up on the left. But I'd much rather, if I was James Taylor, I want high up on the left, Dale Rooney, on the ball, crossing. I'll score goals then.
Absolutely.
He's massive for them. Rooney's massive for them, Steve-O. He, last year and the year before that, if you look at his stats, winning penalties, getting into the balls into the box, getting into the box himself, goals, assists, he's always very, very high. So he's massive for them as well. You have Ham Homan, you have Tierney Homan, and Colin Whelan and JT.
But if there's one man who knows how to beat Bohemians, it's Kevin Doherty, Drogheda United. Quickly on them, Vinny, before we go, very briefly, it does look like they're going to a back four. Is that a deliberate effort by Doherty to try and solve their defensive issues they're having?
Yeah, and I think as much as the back three worked for so long, I often say, I always go against the back three. It's not that I'm not a favourite, it depends on your squad. But the difference with a back four is it gives you clarity.
Yeah,
gives you clarity. Position is, your right back is here. I'm inside him by this amount. Same with your, just that. People know their jobs a little bit more. Sometimes we see, we go back to shells very quickly, balls into boxes, and there's people looking. Should the wing back be in back on the cover? All of that stuff. With Drogheda, I think it's Kevin going back to basics a little bit, giving people definite jobs. You can see him on the training ground dragging people around. This is what I want you to do. Head the stuff away. And I think it works best for them. I wouldn't be against them going back to the back three again when results continue to pick up. Or don't be shocked if they see it. But it does give their back four a bit of clarity. Like, people will know their jobs. They'll be very good at it. Bulger, Geely will know their jobs. And Conor Kane has been around the league a long time. Yeah. Yeah, so people know their jobs.
Absolutely. Should be a great game. I'll be there myself at Daly Mount Park. G-Mac, you heading down the RSE? Will you be on Radio Foil?
Too far for me, Steve-O. Too far for me.
Typical. Okay,
well, listen. LOI TV.
Enjoy it on LOI TV. Vinny, you're heading up to Oriel Park, so hopefully you'll have a nice cold pint bottle of McCardle's waiting for you up there at Oriel Park, and best of luck.
Half lager. Factory.
Good luck to yourself and Ben anyway on that game. A Friday night, it will be on Off the Ball from 7 o'clock. Kickoff is at 7:45. Don't forget to tune into LOI Late Night on X on Off the Ball from 10 o'clock with Shane Keegan and Barry Murphy. They'll take your calls on your team. And then, of course, LOI wrap-up on Saturday morning with Ross Flanagan on your social media channels or wherever you get your podcasts, I should say. We'll be back with you next week.
The LOI Pod on Off the Ball. Catch live and exclusive national radio commentary of the Men's League of Ireland Premier Division on Off the Ball all season.